Are there any changes to the agenda as presented to us by the staff?
No, sir.
Without objection, the agenda is approved. Minutes of July 12th, 2007. Are there any additions, corrections, modifications? Okay, without objection, the minutes are approved as presented. Our first action item is on the multiple-year bus procurement, and this says Bob Golden is going to do this one.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Golden is on his way up.
Good morning. My name is Bob Golden. I'm the Assistant Chief Engineer of Vehicles for Bus Maintenance, and it is my pleasure this morning to present to you the multiple-year bus procurement. First off, as background, in June of 2006, the board authorized the funding and initiation of a multiple-year bus procurement. This procurement allows Metro to purchase up to 500 replacement buses over a five-year period at a rate of 100 buses per year. It also includes options to purchase up to 500 additional buses at a rate of 100 buses per year. One thing we want to make note of, as far as procurement, Metro has an immediate need for replacement of 22 of the articulated buses, representing 50% of our 1995 articulated bus fleet. Next slide, please. As an overview to take you through this process, the solicitation was initially advertised in November 2006. May 30th, 2007, proposals were received from four bus manufacturers. July 24th, 27th, we had face-to-face negotiations with all four proposers on site here at Metro. On August 13th, 2007, we received best and final offers from all four of the initial proposers. We managed to keep them all in the game. North American Bus Industries, NABI, New Flyer of America, Daimler Chrysler Commercial Bus North America, representing Orion, and Design Line. The successful proposer will commence delivery of the base order of the new bus procurement in September of 2008. The first 50 of these buses under this procurement will complete the board resolution 2004-32 for buses to be assigned to Maryland Division. This was a best value negotiated procurement, and after a very long and protracted and careful evaluation, Metro staff is recommending that the proposal submitted from New Flyer of America provides the best overall technical and cost value for Metro's fleet requirements under this procurement. These buses on the screen right now represent BRT styling, and that was a requirement for the bus procurement. If you want, the top one to the left is a Design Line. The one on the upper right is an Orion NG. The one on the lower right is the NABI entry, and the one on the lower left is the New Flyer BRT bus. Next slide, please. As we mentioned, that we needed 22 articulated buses for immediate replacement. Our recommendation is for CNG articulated buses in this application because the buses will be assigned to the Bladensburg Division, and this Bladensburg Division is a CNG facility. Los Angeles County Metropolitan Transit Authority is the only source available with unused options available for compressed natural gas articulated buses and favorable pricing. LACMTA has previously assigned other unused options from this contract to other transit agencies. North American Bus Industries, NABI, is currently the only bus manufacturer that builds a 60-foot articulated BRT-style CNG bus. Not only do we have one on the screen, but this is a model of the bus that we are proposing under this procurement. The BRT buses will operate out of the Bladensburg Division, which has CNG propulsion technology, and this will standardize the technology in that particular division. Authorization to procure these buses will reduce the delivery time by approximately 6 months and will also reduce the per vehicle cost. Next slide, please. So, our final recommendation, we're requesting board approval to award a multiple-year best value negotiated procurement to New Flyer of America for 452 buses over a five-year period at a rate of up to 100 buses a year, including options to purchase up to 500 additional buses at 100 per year if funding becomes available. In addition, we're requesting board approval to procure 22 articulated BRT-style CNG buses from North American Bus Industries from Los Angeles County MTA. And that concludes our presentation.
Are there any questions? Mr. Linton.
Is that second procurement on the Navy buses, is that from a piggyback?
Yes, it is. Using 4221 ESR to build the provisions.
Okay. Are those composite?
They are not composite buses.
They're not composite?
No. The composite bus was actually pulled out by Navy. They're no longer producing it.
Really?
Yes.
Huh.
There was some problem with the bus having to be manufactured offshore. They had not moved the technology stateside as yet. That was the 45-foot composite bus.
They were doing it offshore?
It was in Hungary, yes. And they did have a waiver at one time from the FTA. The waiver expired, and the FTA declined to extend it. So they pulled it off the market.
Buy America denies it.
You may or may not know that we actually invested about $5 million with two defense contractors in Los Angeles to produce the composite parts.
Yes.
And the Justice Department wouldn't let them do it. So that's why we end up losing the opportunity to do that domestically.
Justice Department.
Are there any other questions? Are you finished? Are there any other questions?
A couple of quick questions, just related to the existing fleet, because I think it's good that we're planning for additional bus fleet improvements. We need to keep updating our fleet. It seems to me from the reports I've seen that we've been getting better performance out of the existing fleet.
Yes.
How does this fit into balancing the performance of the existing fleet and bringing these on? This is not saying we're buying these, this is just the availability or the ability to buy these. I'm wondering how we're going to balance the purchase with the addition of new buses with a fleet that seems to be getting better in terms of how it performs.
So when you say balance against the fleet, you mean as far as increasing MDVF?
No.
And then fuel? Well, we have been steadily improving our MDVF with the introduction of the last 442 new buses between 2005 and 2007. We went up to a record high of over 6,200 miles between service interruptions. We would expect to see a continued increase or move in that direction with the introduction of these buses. Certainly with these 22 Navy buses coming in to replace 22 of the older buses, which do represent one of the more unreliable mini fleets within our overall fleet, we would certainly expect to see an improvement in reliability and an uptick in reliability figures when these buses are introduced. These buses represent the latest advancements in state-of-the-art technology and performance. And our new phrase, we'll continue to move while we're model forward in providing the best ride in the nation. That's what our goal is.
I know we talked about having an average age of the fleet. I think seven years is the target. Where do we stand today?
Right now we're about at 7.42.
Mm-hmm.
In this procurement, if we continue to move forward with the 452 buses and the 22 CNGs, we will stay right about at that same level.
Okay.
And the goal is to stay at about 7.5 years, 7 and 7.5 years, given a maximum rate age of 15 years. Now, admittedly, we still will have some buses in operation at the outset of this procurement that will be in excess of 15 years. But by the time we get to the third or fourth year of the procurement, all of those will have been retired. We'll be right at the median age of about 7.5 and a maximum age of 15 years.
Okay, last question. So we're replacing out the Navies, the articulated buses now. For
half of the Navies, 22. The other group will be replaced as part of the hybrid electric procurement.
Okay, so the other 452, which subfleets, you mentioned subfleets we're trying to switch out, which ones are those?
Okay, the 452 buses will include 410 40-footers, 22 60-foot articulated buses, which will replace the remainder of the Navy fleet, and 20 35-foot buses, which will replace part of the, we've determined that some of the 30-foot buses can be replaced with 35-footers, and that'll replace the oldest 30-foot buses.
Could you provide just a breakout of which specific manufacturer on the break? That's what I'm more interested in, is which specific buses, in terms of the manufacturer, we're replacing the 452.
The replacement vehicle.
Obviously, the articulates will replace eventually the 44 Navies.
Mm-hmm.
Then we'll start off with our 1990 Flex Metros. They'll be phased out. Then we'll progress to the 1992 Orion 5s. They'll be phased out. Then we have our 19, will cut into our 1993s and 94, Metroplexes, probably in the third or fourth year of the contract. Now, it will also be replacing the remaining 20 of Orion 2, 26-foot buses. Those buses will be phased out also.
Mr. Golden, I was not here at the time that the board originally approved the funding for this, so I may be going over some old materials, but I was struck in this presentation that there is absolutely no budget information and no cost information.
Okay, I can address that.
Good.
The 22 articulated buses will come in at approximately $17.6 million, mm-hmm. and that's with spare parts, training, all associated delivery. We're expecting the average vehicle cost, the actual per cost of the vehicle to be $755 to $760. We're still passing some details. 452 buses will come in at 284.9 million over the 5 years.
And how much of this will be within Metro Matters and how much of this is beyond Metro Matters?
25 of the all of these are within Metro Matters.
All of these buses, even though they're going to be delivered beyond 2010.
Sorry?
Even though they're going to be delivered, it looks like beyond 2010, you're saying
the funding is for Metro Matters. Yes, sir.
So the expenditure is going to occur beyond the Metro Matters time frame?
Yes, it is.
One of the things that I didn't realize when I was first looking at this presentation was what the presentation we're going to get later on finance and our budget, and particularly our capital budget, looks like. And one of the concerns I have as I look at this is we have a whole series of overruns in a number of different categories in the Metro Matters program. Is this an underrun, an overrun, or exactly on target?
This is within the budget.
Is it an underrun?
It's slightly
underrun.
Slightly
underrun. And so would it be possible for you to give us, not right this moment, but between now and the board meeting, how much money is in Metro Matters in which category, how that relates to prior purchases against the bus rolling stock category, and how this fits in also?
Okay.
Yes.
And it sounds as though we also have some money that might solve some of the problems in the rest of Metro Matters.
Well, one of the issues, I'm not quite sure that's the case, under Metro Matters, you can't move monies between categories. They have to be within these specific categories.
Right.
And I'm not sure we can move, and I have to ask legal counsel.
I think that will be addressed in the VIP program, the program is actually a surplus.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, and I think this would be considered a surplus, which would allow you to move it from one category to another.
Okay.
So I'm a little bit nervous about moving this project ahead without knowing for sure what those numbers are. So I would entertain a motion to approve this and send it to the board subject to obtaining the budget information on how this relates to Metro Matters, if that.
I'll move that. I have a question.
And a second?
I have a question.
Question. Mr. Zimmerman.
First, on slide 8, you've got what I believe are intended to be pictures of those that you reviewed in making the best value determination.
Yes, sir.
Which is the one that you actually of those picked?
The one on the bottom left, then the one on the right is the 42-foot version of the CNG.
Yeah, I don't need to see a different version of one we're not buying, but the one on the bottom left is the one that you bought. That's New Flyers.
Flyer. And then they have the 60-foot version of that also.
Are you buying a 60-foot version?
Yes, sir.
Of that?
If you go to the next slide. That's, well, okay, those are the two versions, the rigid body and the Arctic.
Okay, so that's what you're buying.
Yes, there's a hybrid electric. Now, the preceding slide represents the CNG bus. That's the Navi. That's the CNG bus, this one.
Okay, how many different kinds of buses are we actually getting in this?
There are two orders. You have the Navis for the CNG order, then you have the New Flyers for the hybrid electric order. And the hybrid electric order covers.
You're buying some 40-foot buses.
35s, 40s, and 60s. Yes.
All right. Okay. So the 35s are manufactured by who?
New Flyer.
And the 40s are managed by
New Flyer.
And this Arctics are.
22 of the Arctics, the hybrids, are manufactured by New Flyer. Then you have the 22.
So it's a mix on that. The Arctics are the ones that are mixed.
Yes, sir.
Some Navi and some New Flyer. What is the? So you're buying two different types of Arctics.
Right.
What's the average price of each of those orders?
The
price per bus.
The Arctic bus is coming in at about 7:55.
CNG,
I'm sorry. And the Arctic hybrid electrics are coming in just over 7:95.
Okay, so they're pretty close.
Yes.
On the 40s and the 35, what are the price of each of those?
The 40-foot bus was $539, and 35-footer, I think it was about $534. I'd have to check the
usage. Okay, so the hybrids in the 40-foot bus are still running $500,000
more. Yes, yes.
Whereas other buses we buy, whether CNG or diesel, would be $3-something.
The CNG bus, the last order of CNG buses we purchased in 2007 were $389,995, and the diesels were $349. But the new 07 engines that have been cut in since then, they're probably going to, if we're going with that, it would probably be about $400,000 for a CNG bus, $400 to $415 or so. And a diesel bus probably would go up to about $370 to $380.
But it's still, the hybrid in the 40-foot is still running at least 25% higher than
That's about right.
That's a pretty substantial difference in price. All right, thank you.
Mr. Lenton.
Sorry. Why did we, where else is articulated hybrids being used?
They're being used out in Everett, Washington, Seattle, Washington, which has over 200 of them in operation. They have them up in Cleveland. There's another property out there in California. But the hybrids, there's about 400 to 600 of them out there in revenue service.
Arctics?
Arctics, yes. The biggest fleet is in there, Seattle, with over 200, and they just ordered 500 more, of which Chicago's buying 150 off of their contract. New York City is apparently getting ready to do a sole source procurement for 486 hybrid electric Arctics. Our friends up the road in Baltimore are getting ready to go out 30 to replace their current diesel buses.
Same propulsion?
Yes. Well, yeah, actually they are, because the propulsion system that New York's going for this time, they're going away from their VAE system over to the Allison system for the hybrid, for the Arctics. And that's what Baltimore is going with the Allison, and that's what the Seattle buses are. As far as the hybrid electric propulsion and 40-footers, it's a pretty well split between VAE and Allison, and there are a few ISEs out there, and so that means the parallel being the Allison system and the ISE in the series system, and the VAE being the series system. The hybrid electric Arctic buses are predominantly Allison.
This is Allison.
Yes, these are both. I mean, these
why
are.
Why do we go to hybrid for the Arctics? And why aren't we using? Because I'm asking. Because I'm looking at two different manufacturers' parts inventories in terms of our Arctic replacements.
Right.
So we'll have half of those will be hybrid electrics, the other half is CNGs, two different manufacturers, part inventories and manufacturers, as well as mechanics training and all that kind of stuff.
There was a rationale behind that. The CNG buses, we opted to move to them for Bladensburg. We didn't want to introduce another technology there. And when we were offered a better price, as well as expedited delivery, it made sense to go with CNG buses at that facility. You were standardizing TNG technology, and you know, as far as introducing a new technology for maintenance, et cetera, it just was the best route to take. The other Arctics are located in facilities that are not equipped for CNG. They are currently housing old diesel buses. And these Arctics would have commonality with the remainder of the 40-foot fleet that's also going to be deployed around the remainder of the facilities. That's why we ended up with a split like that.
Thank you.
Mr. Zimmerman's line of questioning actually raises another issue, and that is, at the time that we were having the discussions of clean diesel versus CNG versus hybrid, one of the reasons that we approved the numbers of hybrids that we did and was to get some information, operational information, about the three different types of buses. Are we, in fact, collecting information about life cycle costs and pollution,
et cetera? If I could defer to Mr. Wolf, he did bring some support information.
I don't think we necessarily want to present it.
Okay.
We just want to make sure we are collecting.
The hybrids are
a long agenda.
The hybrids are giving us a very good return on our investment. They are, of the three fleets that were introduced over the past 2 years, they are the leading fleet, the hybrid electric buses, as far as MDBF.
Well, I don't want to start that discussion right now, but I do want to make sure
that we are,
in fact, collecting the information so that we can have that discussion at an appropriate time in the future.
Yes, we are.
I didn't want to start the discussion.
You did.
Mr. Chairman, I appreciate this. Now's not the time to get into full discussion. Yes. And I agree that the most important thing is that we know they're collecting the data and can present it later. But if there's a short one-sentence answer to the question about if you're looking at this and it's some measure of running costs, which of course includes fuel and other things like that, how does, in short terms, the hybrids compare, how do they compare in terms of running cost, cost per mile, cost per day, year, whatever it is, with the other?
I just
want the short answer.
It's just a one.
It's not the same, it's cheaper, it's more?
It's actually cheaper.
Is it significantly cheaper?
For the CNG fleet, yes. The diesel fleet, I think they're much closer with the clean diesel and the hybrid electric. The problem with the CNG bus is very unforgiving and idling. It's a heavy stop and go traffic.
I was asking about the hybrid bus, and I want to know whether or not there's a significant difference in running costs between that and the other fleets.
That's what I'm saying. It is.
You're saying it's about the same as diesel?
The CNG cost right now is approximately $1.09 per gallon average, compared to the hybrid, which is 79 cents per mile. And that's not all inclusive. That's fuel cost.
But how does that compare with the diesel?
Compared to diesel, the diesel costs are 70 cents.
Okay, and that's, you're just talking about on fuel terms?
Yes. I'm talking about fuel, power cost.
Oh, everything.
Money maintenance cost.
That's what I wanted to know.
The cost is we're seeing. That's a year.
So it's a little cheaper than diesel.
It's a little bit more expensive.
A little bit more expensive.
Diesel, 70 cents. Hybrid, 79. CNG is $1.09.
I think this is a discussion we're going to want to have in a more full way than a later day. Ms. Hewitt.
Let me make sure I just understand some of this. The bottom line, which you said ultimately, is that the CNGs, Bladensburg was the only facility that was capable of dealing with the CNGs, and the others are not fitted.
Right. Bladensburg is the only facility we're replacing articulated buses.
Right.
It can deal with the CNG bus. Our other CNG facility does not have articulated buses assigned to it.
That's awesome.
So, there are 22 diesel buses assigned to Bladensburg, and we'll replace them with these.
But the problem with them is that they are unforgiving and have a lot of idling, and that's what you said?
Yeah, that's as far as fuel economy. They're a little bit less forgiving as far as idling, and their fuel economy is not quite as good as the diesels and the hybrid electrics.
And I take it that you have worked also extensively with the Insurance County Department of Public Works and Transportation, not that they're not caught by surprise or anything on this, right?
No, they are not.
Okay, yes. And who have you been talking with?
I personally have not, but I'm...
Well, who is who? Who has?
Which department?
Department of Public Works and Transportation.
Well, we coordinate the discussion on the vehicles with the representatives from that department, and I will go out and find out exactly who we've talked to. Yeah, we'll go back and find out exactly who we've spoken.
Thank you.
Mr. Kaufman?
I just asked if the record show that the ghost of Charlie Deacon and I smiled when the report was made.
We do have a motion on the floor, which is to send this on to the board with information, cost and budget information to be provided to the board before the board meeting,
yes.
Hopefully like a week before the board meeting. If there are no other comments, all in favor of moving this to the board?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed?
You have one abstention.
You're abstaining? Okay. Can we record one abstention on that, please, Ms. Hewlett? Let's move on to our information items. The first item is a recap of some of the recent events that all of us have been very aware of. Mr. Francis.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As previously discussed, in a matter of two nights, August 26th and 27th, a series of events occurred on the metro system.
Excuse me, Mr. Francis.
Did we approve minutes?
Yes, we did.
Okay, I missed that.
We moved very quickly through both the agenda and the minutes.
All right.
Do you wish to go back to that item?
There is the agenda. I don't swear I missed the vote on this, but I will take your word that it was done.
I'm sorry. Mr. Francis, we have two mics now.
Thank you. I was just informed by my general manager that I wasn't heard. In a matter of two nights, in August 26th and 27th, a series of events occurred on the Metro system. These events caused several delays and closed several of our rail stations, mostly on the yellow and blue line between Huntington and Pentagon City stations. I wanted to if I can get you to look at the map or focus on the map, I just wanted to highlight some of the areas and what took place on the night of the 26th. At about 5:45 p.m., we got a call in the control center about a smoldering insulator that was out at Mount Vernon station. Shortly after that, we got another call that we lost power down the National Airport. And if you can see from there, a series of events took place. Once we lost power down the National Airport, we had a couple of trains that were between the what I call the grid, and that's the power grid, between King Street and Crystal City, and we had about three or four trains that were caught in this power outage that we had to provide rescue service to our customers to get them back to stations safely. We also had started a bus bridge service there to assist our customers in that area. It's in probably in about a two and a half hour period, we had about 10 incidents that took place. Somewhere around 10 o'clock, when all was clear, we went back and tried to troubleshoot the problem to see what it was. We did successfully raise power again. We ran test trains to make sure that the power was holding up, because our goal was now to be ready to start the AM service in the morning, on Monday morning, when we put out roughly about 782 vehicles and about 125, 126 trains. We were successful to do that. We had a successful AM peak period, midday, and starting in the afternoon peak period, we were still operating fine. Around 7:05 p.m. on the 27th, we had another series of events that took place. We lost power from Pentagon City all the way through to National Airport. Our first report at Pentagon City was of a smoldering insulator, and then it started to trickle from there. I should say at this time, too, in this area between Pentagon City and King Street, we have roughly about five substations in that area that powers our service there. We lost Pentagon City and National Airport again. Then we start having another series of events all the way from Huntington up and through National Airport. But with not having any power in that area, we had to immediately ramp up to have a bus bridge service. We did from Pentagon City to Huntington. The bus bridge carried about thousands of our passengers. Once again, after that, we went back and did an evaluation of our service to see and start troubleshooting again exactly what happened. I'd like to say at this time, this was an unprecedented chain of events that had a tremendous impact on thousands and thousands of our customers. And as Deputy Chief Executive Officer, I wanted to apologize to each one of our customers, because what they've grown to appreciate here at Metro is to provide them with quality of service. And obviously, on those 2 days, we did not. We're in the period of still going through our investigation to find out exactly what took place. We formed a task team to take a look at that. Mr. Dave Kubitschek is sitting to my right, is the head of this task team, and we're going through various scenarios. We tried to simulate certain events that took place just to find out what exactly did happen. We stepped up our maintenance program. I guess I should step back. On the next night when we went out, we made sure that we double and triple checked and made sure that we had sufficient power to operate. We had our power technicians standing by at each station. We had supervisory support at each station. Buses, just in case we had anything to go wrong a second time. And thank goodness that we didn't, and we were able to provide the service to our customers. The investigation is still going on. It is our hopes that after we gather, we're having another meeting tomorrow, if we gather information, then we can start making a determination of exactly what we think took place on both those evenings.
Will your interim solutions then flow from the results of that and your long term? Or do you already know some of those?
Well, in the short term, what we did is obviously the first thing we did was establish this task force to take a look at it. And what I mentioned just a minute ago was to set up the supervisory and the power technicians to take a look at it. Mm-hmm. We now have taken a look at all our preventative maintenance procedures and make sure we're evaluating, or in the process of evaluating, all of the substations. There's about 98 substations that we want to take a look at. A corrosion control program, which allows us to go out and look at all the insulators and the stud bolts that are in the station. We had a program at first that only looked at certain section or certain line sections, and now we have increased that to look at the whole system. And we are working on getting a preventative maintenance program to do that. But we stepped up our preventative maintenance with our track inspections. If we come across insulators that need to be cleaned, we're reporting those, and we're trying to clean those up before debris or paper or so forth that's in there, which can start smoldering and can lead to fires as well. Long-term solutions, we're looking at getting specialized equipment out there called geometry cars that we can operate on the system, like thermal imaging systems that can take a look at the rail, determine if there's cracks in rail insulators. That are going bad and so forth. We're also going to take a look at the insulators that we have and see if there's any type of insulators out there that are different, some that may have a different type of coating on them to prevent any kind of stray current that occurs in there. So that's part of what the team is taking a look at, and probably in the next committee meeting, then I'll be able to still update the committee on our findings and what we're going to do for the long term.
Okay. And would you please schedule that on for the next committee meeting then?
I will make an agenda.
Other questions?
Yeah, I'm kind of curious. It's been almost 3 weeks. I mean, what do you think happened? I mean, obviously, maybe some of the events may be standalone, but I mean, is there some inkling of what you think the problem may be?
Well, one of the things that we do know, there was a low and high voltage problem that sparked or set some type of spark through the transformer at Potomac Yard. It completely took that transformer out, which meant that we didn't have any power in that substation at all.
That's, what do you think caused the fluctuation of voltage, I guess?
Possible surge. Had to be some type of surge that caused that.
Is there any way to build any redundancy in some of our systems as well, backups that are there that kick in automatically?
That's one thing that we were looking at, portable substations. One thing that when we looked at this, we said that we can have portable substations that are linked to the ones that we have. Because at the present time now, if we have a substation that goes out, we can back feed through the ones that we have. But we were looking at, since our infrastructure renewal program, so since we're upgrading some of our substations, we also thought it would be a good idea to have portable backups just in case.
I think it's very important and helpful for us to understand actually what led to those events, and I think we want to have those answers. But I think the other thing that I would like to see critiqued is the way we communicate to our customers on that day. I think that's what I heard a lot about after that event, was it wasn't something went wrong, because on occasion when you have a very complex system, you're going to have mechanical failures. But really, how did we communicate to our passengers? Is there something we can do to make sure we do that better? Because we can't control what happens on the system, but we can't control what we say.
I agree with you 100%. That is one on the interim programs that I'm going to personally chair, because the biggest challenge that we have is getting information to our customers when we have a service interruption. And we have to get better in doing that, because our customers need to be able to make informed decisions on which direction they have to go. If you're like me, sometimes I'm used to, or I'm comfortable to getting on the train to Pentagon City, and I'm going to Huntington or wherever my destination is. If I get thrown a curve, now I don't know which direction that we have to go, and that's one thing that the committee is going to take a look at.
Any other questions? Thank you, Mr. Francis. Looks like you have the next item as well.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As previously discussed, I thought what I would do is start off with the performance measures that we pretty much use over the past year. And it's my hopes in working with the committee chair that we can look at what type of performance measures we want to view in this committee. My thought on it is that I don't want to just give you a bar chart and tell you that certain things are going well or not, but also to show you what we're actually doing in the operating department to meet our individual goals. Real on-time performance, if you can see the performance in 2006 was at 97%. Of course, it went to 89% in 2007. As you'll see, Donna Murray is going to do a report, and you'll see this kind of jives exactly with what she found out from our customers. You see, we took a spike in January through January and May, and part of that was we went through vehicle problems, infrastructure problems. But what this also had us do is go back and take a look at it, because I'm a true believer that you need to manage with data too, because it tells your story. And what we did is went back and we took a look at that, but the data also showed us that we had problems February, March, and April, but we started addressing those problems. We were pretty good at identifying what the problem might be, if it was a door or brakes or so forth. But what we now are doing is we're looking at what the root cause is. You know, if you have one door problem or three door problems, then we have a problem. So we need to take a look at not just the individual vehicles, but the total fleet as well. The customer
satisfaction. Mr. Zimmerman?
If you go back to the previous slide, that's so striking. Normally, if I got something like that, I'd wonder if I have a mistake. The 2006 number is just amazingly steady. It's a straight line, practically. Hardly any fluctuation. Apart from the level of, you know, there's the question of the level, the absolute level of where it is, which happens to be very high. It's just so little variation in that I kind of would wonder about it if I was seeing it all by itself. And then I see 2007, which really looks like, I mean, things really went to heck in 2007, didn't they? But it's not just way below. It also shows a lot more variation. So either something really bad is happening that wasn't happening a year ago, and I'm a little skeptical of that because it's not like everybody said everything was great a year ago. Or we have something funny going on in our data collection and reporting.
Well, one of the things that I guess my first reaction to it when I saw the 97% was that our goal, because I know our goal was 97%, and we are looking into what you just raised as well. Because it is a fluctuation, and when you go from 97 to 89, that is a big difference. So, but I will tell you this, that there's some things that did take place and occur in between the January time frames that we are looking at as well.
It's not just the fluctuation between 06 and 07. There's no fluctuation from month to month in 06, and I think
that's right.
I think one of the things that we have talked about is to look at the type of data that's being collected and report fairly regularly to the board and see whether we can generate, we've got pretty good computer systems that look at this stuff and collect this data, generate better information for the board as to what's going on. It does appear, however, that there was a substantial reduction of some sort in reliability, and as we will hear from Donna later on, Donna Murray, on the customer satisfaction, safety and reliability are the two top issues for our customers. So it says we have an area that we do need to pay attention to.
I don't doubt that. I don't recall the previous years having been so wonderful as all that.
And that data is going to be reviewed, and hopefully we will see some more of that next month, maybe in slightly different form.
It might be difficult to change it. It's just this is the data that we have. Yeah. That's how we report it. We only can report what our documents show. I understand what you're saying. I thought the same thing, but I can't change what the documents show. But it did not look like normal fluctuation that you see in operations.
But the overall magnitude is still significant,
yes,
even if
is.
There is no class action. Yes. Ms. Hutchins.
Just a comment in terms of that data and what that data should show us. I think we always look at the number, and the number says, oh, it's either good or bad or whatever. But can we better report this performance in the context of a rider? For example, if you saw the 97, but you were sitting on the train this morning delayed, you'd wonder, what does 97 mean to them?
Yes,
exactly.
Delivering for me today. And I think we need to be able to articulate that to our customers so that they can have a way to measure their experience in the system. If it's a blip, it's a blip, and you can live with that. But if that customer is sitting there delayed 3 days out of the week or something, 60 ought to be down on our chart somewhere, but it doesn't show. So some way that I believe that our overall performance is probably good and maybe excellent, but I think that data needs to be able to articulate that a little bit more for the customer that is experiencing the system.
Ms. Hutchins, you may want to revisit that when Ms. Murray does her presentation. Mr. Monomy.
Just one observation. If I remember, well, this is obviously the fiscal year. If I remember last year when I was actually an employee of the authority, we went through a pretty rigorous process of redefining the way we measured performance metrics. And I think that's the reason why there's a big difference, because we recognize, you know, the 97% being reported wasn't, in fact, what people experienced. And I think that 2007 probably better represents the actual customer experience. And I think for whatever reason, in 2006, we had a different measure because we just measured differently.
Mr. Giancola.
The only other question I have is, this is obviously a composite of the whole system. It'd be nice to know what it's like in each of the individual lines.
Yes. Okay.
To see the breakout of which lines are more reliable than others.
Okay.
That is one thing that I will have for the committee, too, because I, too, agree that we need to break it out in individual lines. Okay, next slide. All right, the bus mean distance between failure. I will say that I believe these numbers are correct when we went through them. Our bus area has made tremendous strides on mean distance between failure. There's about 1,000 miles different, and I want to attribute that to the fact that Phil Wallace and Steve Petricelli, Mr. Victoria's team has now taken a look at all the buses and looked at what the root causes are and set up a different preventative maintenance program. And even though I know the average life of our buses are going down, I think they did a tremendous job of trying to not only meet the goal but determine what the problems are and have solutions to those problems. Next slide. From a customer satisfaction point, pretty much stayed the same, but it went up from 78% to
79%.
Escalators, mean time between failures. In 2006, it was 167 hours. We've increased that to about 186. Our Ellis team is doing a good job in their maintenance as a program. As we know, we have a rehabilitation program going on with the escalators and elevators, and I think this is showing what the rehab program is demonstrating. The elevator mean time between failure slightly down in 2007, 504 hours, and with the goal being 600. But one thing I wanted to emphasize here is that between January and June, you see a decline, and what happened in that time stretch is that the maintenance was being performed on the elevators by just a elevator maintenance team. And what we did was, and David Carlson and his group looked at, is taking a step back to go forward. They also trained their escalator personnel and also maintained the elevators. We had a learning curve there, as you can see, for a couple of months, but I give credit where credit's due, is that our employees are just as good as maintaining their equipment, and I'm a firm believer that if it's in your house, you'll maintain it better. So I'm looking forward to seeing better results because they're being handled inside rather than so much outside. Metro Access on time performance 2006 has increased from 89% to 93%. The Access Services is showing that its performance is a continued growth. I look forward also to reporting monthly on on-time performance with Access Service, and as well as how we're progressing in that area.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Mr. Duck.
It's my understanding we didn't revise how we were collecting data here. That this is because it's a contractor and the data is steady flow. So what I hope we're seeing here is, in fact, a steady stabilization of our performance, and is stabilizing at a higher level than what we had last year. Would I be accurate in saying that?
Yes.
Thank you.
Okay. Next slide is just a reminder that
the news is okay. Yeah.
There's more good news.
Okay. The next slide is just I want to give you I think Mr. Zimmerman had asked for a recap on the rail fleet, and just wanted to tell you that these numbers reflect that our total fleet is 998 vehicles. I wanted to put in there the 2,000 and 3,000 rehab. There's a 38 car float that goes in there. That's the cars that are going up through Austin and coming back through us. Presently, our service requirement is 782. In September 24, we're going to start testing an additional 18 cars. Our customers have already spoken on the blue line. Not only is it overcrowdedness, and we're going to try to eliminate that by testing and adding those cars to the blue. I believe the breakdown is we have 7 4-car trains on the blue, one on the yellow, and the other two cars are going to be used as a gap train. So we'll start testing on the 24th and start adding them in, phasing them in as we go.
Question, Mr. Chairman.
Yes, Mr.
Chairman. Of the 998, how many are the 6,000 series?
There's 184 6,000 series, and I believe 110 or 120 are on property now.
Exact numbers are, we have 104 for service delivery, and we have 128 physically on property. They're going, that's the remaining balance.
So 104 actually in service.
That's correct.
Okay. And how many more are coming before the end of the year?
The total order is 184, so we have 80 more rail cars to get delivered. And the way our schedule is working at this time, we should have all of them here on property in February.
Are there any other questions? What's your presentation? Our next item is a request from this committee that we get a report on the ad hoc committee recommendations for Metro Access. Mr. Kent.
Good morning. As we mentioned from the June board meeting, this is an opportunity for us to come back and give some information to the committee on the status of the recommendations that were made by last year's ad hoc advisory committee on Metro Access. This presentation is an information item only. No specific board action is required. Again, this is a progress report on the implementation of these items, and it is important to note before I begin that all of the activities on this agenda are being managed within the approved budget for Metro Access, and that the inventory of these items is all but complete. As you can see from this slide, 8 of the 11 recommendations are completed. And again, underscoring that these were all done within the FY07 funding for Metro Access. And I'd just like to highlight a few of these. Scheduling improvements included a reduction of the reservations window from 14 to 7 days. This was implemented actually about a year ago through board action. And also, some refinements were made to the methods that Metro uses for scheduling Metro Access trips. Now, when we include this item on here, we want to make the point that we have made some improvements to scheduling with Metro Access, but clearly there's more work to be done. There will be greater efficiencies and improved on-time performance when the Metro Access fleet is expanded, and that's going to be accomplished also thanks to board action in June. The Job Access Reverse Commute Funds will fund that expansion of the fleet. And also, additional software is being acquired to help us to better analyze Metro Access performance and improve our approach to scheduling. Another recommendation that is complete at this stage for Metro is our defining relationship with human service transportation providers, and we look forward to continuing our work with the Council of Governments on the regional human service coordination plan, draft of which was released earlier this summer. We were asked to evaluate the prospect of premium same-day service for Metro Access, and we're listing this item as complete only because the evaluation is complete. There is an ability to do same-day service for paratransit, but it does require partnerships. It is not something that Metro can do unilaterally for several reasons. One, having to do with the existing funding structure, but the more compelling reason is that unlike some other metropolitan areas, we do not have uniformity of accessible taxi cabs throughout the service area. And so to implement same-day service would be problematic because we would not be able to offer equity to all of our paratransit customers throughout the system. And so we would just like to make the comment here that this item is something that we could revisit, but it's going to require coordination with partners and other stakeholders in the region before this could be done in an equitable manner. We also did complete the consultant study of financial implications to the larger body of recommendations, and this Adams report was released in January, and that item was completed. The remaining items I would like to at this time introduce to you our new director of Metro Access, Selene Fair Belton Cummins, who is with us this morning. And she, being responsible for the operational implementation of the remaining items, will brief you on the rest of these items. Thank you.
Good morning. The next item is the increased staffing and contract monitoring. These have been achieved through increased staffing on the contractor side as well as in the Office of Metro Access Service. In my office, we're currently in the process of doing final interviews for more service monitors that will complete this staffing entirely, but we're very, very happy with the increased staffing and the support that it will provide. Next issue is the no-show and late cancellation policy. The cancellation window for a late cancellation was changed to just 2 hours before the pickup window began, per recommendations of the ad hoc committee. It has made it a much you know, friendlier process for the customer. But at the same time, we have also started providing advanced warning prior to any customer being suspended due to repeated violation of the no-show late cancellation policy. And this warning system, the suspension system, and the variation of the definition of late cancellation have all produced a more customer-friendly system, but it has actually reduced our no-show late cancel rates by half. So it is effective while customer-friendly. In the customer service, sorry, got my mic on my nerves. There we go. The The passenger assistance and safety policy was integrated into our door-to-door service implementation, so I will touch on door-to-door in just a moment regarding items that are still being completed. Customer service improvements. We have updated the call recorder system. It is very effective, a very useful tool for training and for complaints investigation. And we have implemented a 24 to 48 hour return call pilot program with customer service complaint responses. So even if we do not have all details to completely resolve a complaint within 24 to 48 hours of it being filed, we're making sure that the customer is hearing back from us. We're acknowledging that the complaint was received. We're providing any information that we have. And then, of course, we're closing out the complaint in its entirety within 5 business days of submission. We've thus far been getting wonderful feedback from our customers that they are beginning to sense that their complaints are being heard, are being investigated, and they're hearing resolutions. Moving on to 3 items that are not yet complete. We have the implementation of door-to-door service. Since the board meeting in June, we have had 2 extensive meetings with the Policy Advisory Committee, specifically on the implementation of door-to-door service. The committee thoroughly reviewed the definition, the proposed policy, and made a number of recommendations to us, which we are integrating into everything we do in putting door-to-door on the street. After receiving their recommendations, we've gone back and looked at the training that would be necessary. The committee very strongly said that they wanted there to be a core group of trainers, providing the trainers to all Metro Access drivers, dispatchers, reservationists, and schedulers, so that the information was consistent throughout the training process, and we thought that was a very important idea and are making sure that that occurs. And we also want to make sure that when we put this service on the road, that everybody responsible for implementing it has received thorough training so that there are no gaps in the knowledge of that staffing base. In reality, having a core group of trainers training over 1,000 employees, and this includes, again, drivers, dispatchers, schedulers, and reservationists, will take a little over 6.5 months. We're in the process of putting together the training materials right now. We have a very tight timeline for that, only about a month to create the curriculum, including Metro's review of that curriculum. We're going to pilot the training internally with my staff, with the other staff from the Department of Access Services, to really make sure that it is covering the needs of this program. But due to the extensive timeline for making sure the training is complete, we are recommending that the service actually be implemented in June 2008. During this entire training program, we will also be providing many opportunities for customers to learn about door-to-door service. We will, of course, be issuing our new customer guide with extensive details on what door-to-door means to customers. We want to have a number of customer forums where we can have question and answer to do with the service and get out there in the community as much as possible so that there are no surprises when it comes. Because although I think we all know that this service will provide a great deal of additional assistance to our customers, if they don't know it's coming or don't understand every detail of how it might affect their routine, that would be of concern to us as well. Customer service improvements. We are currently in the final stages of getting web-based trip booking live for all of our customers. We are making sure that the product that we put out there is accessible to all people, especially our customers who use screen readers. And the chairperson of our E&D committee, Patrick Sheehan, is helping us with that work right now. And as soon as we're confident that it is an accessible product, we're going to do about 2 more weeks of testing and then get that live this this fall by November 2007 for all of our customers. And we will also be releasing the new customer guide by the end of this calendar year. The disability awareness event is one more item left open. We are in the beginning stages of planning this, but what we are conceiving of is actually an opportunity for senior staff of Metro, people within the disability community, and hopefully board members to join us in an experiential event where we can really have some structured and open dialogue with customers with disabilities about their experience riding all three modes of our Metro system, Metro Bus, Metro Rail, and Metro Access. And we look forward to involving you all and updating you as those plans go forward.
Thank you, Celine. That concludes our presentation, unless you have questions.
Mr. Linton?
Chairman, thank you. I thought that was both a pleasant presentation and information and well done. One of the things that I think we need to think about, we often get called to our stakeholders and our larger board members throughout the region when there is a problem. I think it's appropriate that we also reach out to our stakeholders and give them a sense of both progress and what's been going on. Two, I would also suggest that when we get some clear guidelines on door-to-door, that we also reach those stakeholders so they'll know what the rules are, what the requirements are, what the expectations are. Since so many of them get engaged in managing our system from afar, I think it's always important to try to make sure they at least have accurate information. But sometimes they don't have the full range of information as they decide to make both statements and policies. I would just suggest that the progress that we're making, we share the good news, and anything that we're doing that we think is going to be a implementation policy and information that we also make.
Ms. Hutchins, you normally have a comment on the subject.
I was going to just wait. I wanted to say thank you. I think it's, we asked that this come back after we had our last board meeting, and that it was an opportunity not only to come back and brief the board as to where we were, but also to meet with the stakeholders to have them better understand what how these recommendations would go forward. And I think it's an opportunity to one, highlight the accomplishments, but be clear about what will be involved in order to make those next items take place. I think your comment, Mr. Linton, is very appropriate, because the customers are waiting to see the specific improvements on the ground, and I think we should not give any false impressions as to how much they will see and when, and that in order to do that, I think we need to be constantly engaged with them. And I think from our presentation today, we have an opportunity to see that it is a long process, but it should be a thorough one. And most importantly, when the customers see door-to-door, I hope that we will be able to celebrate that as an accomplishment and not feel the bumps in the time frame that we're taking should be able to give us the thoroughness that we need to ensure that the system works well once we are implementing.
Anyone else? Thank you both very much for the update and the presentation.
Thank you.
Next item, Ms. Murray. As Donna is coming up here, let me just comment that I do believe that customer satisfaction is what we're all about. We're here to assure that our customers feel good about the service we're providing. So this is a critical presentation. I wanted to thank Ms. Murray particularly about the pointedness of this presentation and the fact that it's very focused.
Thank you, Mr. Benjamin. Good morning. It's really a pleasure to be here this morning. You know, we all have our images of the perceptions of our service from our customers. We get it mostly anecdotally from our friends, our family, our coworkers, from the media. my opportunity this morning is to give you a more statistically representative view of the perceptions of our service from our customers and the customer satisfaction and from the general population and the public perceptions. This is a presentation of two distinct research efforts. Customer satisfaction, we do it a little bit differently than most other properties in the United States do it. Instead of doing a snapshot in time, which we used to do, we do continuous measurement. We're doing 200 interviews every month, 600 interviews a quarter, 2,400 interviews a year, and they are split between bus and rail. On a monthly basis, 200 really doesn't mean much, but that's why I try to bring it to you quarterly and annually. Okay, let's just go right into it and try and move through this relatively quickly. The first slide shows you the trend of overall satisfaction. This is what is known as top of mind satisfaction. It's one of the very first questions, and the question is, on a scale of 1 to 7, how would you rate your satisfaction with Metro service? On bus side, we're at about 81%, and on the rail side, we're at about 87%. The interesting thing with these two lines, as you can see, from FY04 through FY07, there really isn't much change. On a statistical, from a statistical basis, those lines could be straight. Go to the next slide. Asking satisfaction is very useful, but asking importance is just as useful, because I may be incredibly satisfied with an element of your service that is not very important to me. On this side, what you see is the importance ratings versus the satisfaction ratings, which develop the performance ratings. For both bus and rail, where we perform best is in the area of fares. For both bus and rail, where we have the greatest weakness is in the area of reliability.
No, Terry, if I may stop you for a second, I would just note here that on this list, it appears that people are reasonably satisfied and their performance is fairly good on fares.
Yes, sir.
Two of the most critical things to us, safety and reliability, in both bus and rail, are within the bottom three.
They're within the bottom three, yes, sir.
Which says we do need to focus on this issue.
Excuse me?
We do need to focus on this issue.
Those are our areas of weakness, yes, sir.
Mr. Kaufman.
In our next slide, I'm sorry.
Just trying to extrapolate from this data, would I be correct in saying that for our customers, people, for all the focus, particularly of late on fares, the folks who use our system are much more concerned about reliability than they are the cost of the elasticity, if you will. People are very concerned about having reliable service, and fares, while important, is as important as reliability.
That is a fair extrapolation, Mr. Coffey.
Thank you.
We're moving now from the customer satisfaction survey to the public perceptions of transit. Again, it is a telephone survey. This represents 1,200 of our service area residents. What I need to point out here is that we get more non-riders than riders in this study. This is not continuous. It's a snapshot in time. We did it in 2004, 2005, 2007. In the best case scenario, I would do it again in 2009, in fiscal 2009. I may not, because the numbers have been so stable for so long. So what I'm watching right now is all the demographic patterns in our region before I go out and spend the money on this study again. I may wait until 2010. What you see here is people, again, on a scale of 1 to 10, we ask, would you rate the three different modes as an excellent way to travel in the Washington, D.C. area? Metro is perceived as competitive with the auto as a way to travel in the Washington, D.C. area. As a matter of fact, rail is actually rated higher than the auto by service area population as an excellent way to travel in the Washington, D.C. area. Next slide. In terms of safety from accidents, while perceptions have fallen, Metro Rail is viewed as safer than the other modes when you talk about specifically accidents. Next slide, please. In terms of safety from crime, we see the perceptions have decreased across all three modes. Metro Rail is still perceived as safer from crime than bus or private vehicle. Next slide, please. in terms of offers good value for the money. Perceptions have remained stable since 2004, and Metro continues to perform strong on this attribute. In terms of low cost compared to the other modes of transportation, again, perceptions are relatively stable across all modes, with Metro Bus and Metro Rail performing favorably compared to the auto. Easy and convenient to use. As seen in the past, private auto is perceived as the most easy and convenient mode. However, Metro Rail is strong, with half the service area giving it positive ratings. And then reliability. This should be no surprise. While none of the modes are considered extremely reliable, if you look at these numbers, even private auto is only at 56% for 2007. We're still, Metro Rail is competitive in terms of reliability. Metro Bus has a way to go. So essentially, what did we learn from the public perceptions? Perceptions of Metro Bus, Rail, and the private vehicles have remained relatively unchanged on most attributes. Both Metro Rail and Metro Bus experienced declines in ratings of perception of safety. Bus and Rail experienced significant declines in the ratings for perceptions of safety from accidents, while ratings for private auto improved. And all three modes experienced declines in the ratings of perceptions of safety from crime. There is an appendix with some additional information.
Is that it?
That's it. Do you have any questions?
That's the fastest I've ever seen you do one of these.
And I was trying to slow down.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Are there any questions at all? Anybody? That concludes the agenda of this committee. Shall we move directly to the finance?
Yes, indeed. Well, without objection, we will call to order the meeting of the finance committee. I call to order the meeting of the Finance Administration and Oversight Committee on September 13, 2007. Without objection, I would like to move the WMATA Fair and Revenue Policy, item number D, to the first action item. Is there objection? Is there objection? Hearing none.
Can you explain the change you just made again?
Pardon me.
I want to do the fares first.
Without objection, I wish to move the fares to the head of the agenda. Without objection, our first item on the agenda will be number D, WMATA Fair and Revenue Policy. We need to approve our minutes or consider approval of our minutes for April the 2nd, 2007, June 14th, 2007. Is there a motion to approve the minutes as if read? It's been moved. Is there a second?
Second.
If it's been moved and seconded, I will note that Chair Hewlett moved the approval of the minutes. Mr. Solomon seconded. Are there changes to the minutes, Mr. Benjamin?
No.
Okay. Further discussion in the minutes, hearing none, all those in favor of approving the minutes as if read, say aye. Aye. Opposed, no. The ayes have it. The minutes are approved. Could we have, as you're moving about, if you could do so as orderly as possible. General Manager Cato.
Yes, sir. We're just waiting for the switch on the computers just because we changed the presentation.
Yes, I understand. That
should just take a minute.
Okay, if everybody could take their seats. Now, let's make sure everybody has the materials that have been provided. Does everyone have the latest material? There's something that has just been passed out, which I don't believe is...